It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, yes, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to welcome into the studio this morning a gentleman well known in a variety of circles who now has a little bit more time, the former bookstore owner, David Cheesham. Thank you, David. And of course, on the phone, I want to welcome Zaz Hollander, who's calling in to lend her expertise about events that have happened this week. So here we are in nearing the end of February, and I know that there are many, many different kinds of topics we can address. But Zaz, since you've been covering a few very closely, I'd like to start with the basic question for people here in Alaska. How many moose are there in Anchorage?
They don't know. Maybe 1,000? They don't know. So the Department of Fish and Game is asking people starting today in Anchorage, in the bowl, to report, to call, to text, or to go online at the Fish and Game website, adfg.com, with any reports of moose that people see. And from there, Fish and Game will send out a team of probably 2, maybe 3 technicians, biologists, who will attempt to dart the moose, not with a tranquilizer, but with this little sharp pointy thing that takes out a small skin sample, because what they're looking for is DNA. And this is part of a new kind of innovative research project that's actually based on algorithms developed in bluefin tuna population counts. And it's a different way to do population counts on critters and fish of all kinds, I guess. But it involves checking DNA instead of using collars, which is more invasive, which usually does involve a tranquilizer. And so the public is going to play a big role in this, Fish and Game says, because they can't do what they usually do out here in the valley or in other parts of the state, and that is fly while looking for moose in the snow. And in Anchorage, because of airspace restrictions, they can't do that. So, and they can't drive around and walk around enough to see all the moose. So they're hoping that all those residents who are always seeing moose in their yards can help them get a more accurate count and also develop this new kind of counting moose that could have applications around the state.
Oh, wonderful. So it implies that here in the valley, we know, we have a better picture of how many moose there are.
You know, there is a better picture. I don't have that number in my head right now, but you know, any population estimate is based on a formula, you know, an algorithm. And so it's always kind of a range. You know, it's based on the numbers they see from a plane. So obviously they're not 1, 2, 3, 300, 301. They're not counting exact numbers of moose. So it's all an estimate. And it's an estimate on which some important things are based. You know, how many moose can be hunted, what kind of moose can be hunted, cows, bulls, calves, well, not calves necessarily, but, and then also in other parts of the state and some in parts of the Mat-Su, weather predator control is something that biologists think will bring up moose numbers, and that's controversial in some circles. But anyway, those counts are important, and to some extent, there's some guesswork involved in all of them, but the count in up here in the game units in the Mat-Su was thought to be more accurate than the one in Anchorage.
Okay, well, we'll have better results, and that's a good message to anyone who has been plans to be traveling to Anchorage Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. If you see a moose, you can go to the ADFG website and get the numbers to call in, text in, email. You can do all of that, and they would be very appreciative of your work. David,
that's the Anchorage Bowl.
Yes, Anchorage Bowl.
Anchorage Bowl. Anchorage
right.
Bowl. Okay. So the technicians go in and they shoot a dart, and does the dart fall off with the DNA information?
Yeah, it does.
And then they
retrieve
okay.
the dart. Yep.
Okay. Very good.
Very, very, very interesting. Well, let us switch to a political topic, because it's one that seems to have finally, after all kinds of false starts and the rest of it, resulted in a replacement for Michael Donilevy's seat in the Alaska Senate, where we have an F-22 pilot, a FedEx pilot at the present time, who apparently has resolved the question of whether he's a Republican or not, with a little bit of shade to be thrown on the administration, because he apparently He apparently had attempted twice to register as a Republican back in January. Paperwork was finally found, but somehow didn't get to the point where it was completed, and he was listed. And that caused quite a kerfuffle, with some people suggesting when his name was put forward that he really wasn't a Republican. Any thoughts about that, Zaz, or have you looked at that at all?
I haven't looked very closely at that. I probably know about as much as the two of you do, or potentially even a little bit less. But yeah, I mean, there just seems to be a constant kerfuffle surrounding this position. And it does sound as if this gentleman is very well respected. But yeah, the questions about Republicanism, it's got to be something.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And round three, and it does seem a bit of a surprise that somebody in the Republican Party didn't look it up and see. It's very easy to do, to see if they're declared one way or the other and resolve that before they passed on the name. But the whole scenario, starting with the resignation of Dunleavy to the selection process, which is kind of mysterious and seemed to be no room for any vetting of any sorts, and it's mysterious as to who actually voted for the three potential candidates for.
And the last, as you're pointing out, David, the last, I think, report that I saw suggested that the people that were there, that were present, there were Republicans voted to approve the last candidate. And the real question in my mind, since we look at elections all the time and say, who gets to vote? Was it a big portion of it? Was it only a select few? Would there have been a difference if there had been more people that had been told about the meeting or invited or whatever? So there's a little bit of always been a little bit of interesting question about the internal workings of not only the Republican Party, but sometimes the Democratic Party.
Sure. Yeah. And the, just to back up, because we didn't really give the background, was initially the governor ascertained that the candidates were not necessarily the most qualified, and he selected someone outside of the list, and there was a lot of heat about that.
But it looks like what's finally happening, the Senate will be filled, and there's been a most recent appointment by a woman in Bethel to finally fill out the House side of things, too, yep. Once that is approved by the House Democrats.
Very good.
Well, let's turn to another topic. This week there was one meeting. The school board met, and they did a fairly full agenda, but one of the pieces that came up that took a lot of time and was of considerable interest, I think, and it's still unresolved, involves whether the district will be part of the Alaska Association of School Boards. There's a fee that's paid that's about $20,000 a year, and the district has been a member of that association, which, for those listeners who don't know what it is an association of school boards across the state. There is an executive director of the AASB, there's a board of directors, and there are meetings that are held both in Anchorage as well down in Juneau. And basically the intention is to have people from all of those school boards at the early stages of a legislative session provide direction to the association's staff about what to look at, what to push for, what to lobby for that matter, and all the rest of it, so that its mission is to ensure that things that would be important to all districts are both focused on and achieved in any legislative session. The situation here in the Valley seems to be that there are members of the school board that are not convinced that the amount of money paid and the participation is that beneficial, and it might be an ideological issue of wanting to go it alone. But David, you were for a time on the school board, and do you remember any discussion about this at that time when you were there?
Well, I remember that the association was a really important resource, both for training new school board members, for representing the school boards and at the legislature, for providing information from an independent source about the district. And it was sort of a parallel to the municipal league that city and borough governments would be involved. It's one of those things. It's really hard to imagine making good decisions, being an effective board member without that kind of resource and without the information there. But it, you know, and it was an amount of time. I remember every year the school board goes through a long list of recommended priorities and votes as to whether or not we would support this priority for this kind of legislation and what we would direct the association to lobby for. And that was a lot of thought and a lot of discussion went into that. So it will be interesting to see if people, how people vote on that. I think it is a question of how much do you value professionalism, and there might be a point of view that it's just too elitist to rely on the kind of institutional memory that this association would have, and so someone might decide to vote against it.
And full disclosure, I also served on the school board, and I would tend to agree with everything you've said, David, in terms of if you are interested in knowing what's happening, I can't think of a better resource. There was a second topic, however, that the school board took up, and it looks like it, too, will continue on. It's a topic involving insurance, health insurance. And the basics there are that the school district has been a part of the health trust that is sponsored by, part of NEA Alaska, and has been part of that for some years. And there's been a discussion that's ongoing between the health trust and the district about getting enough information to have the district essentially vet that what they're getting from the health trust is the best deal. And there are some interesting privacy issues. There is some interesting other questions about how much information the district needs in order to get a good counter bid, if you will, if they were to go out and look elsewhere. And that has not been resolved, and it will be ongoing as a discussion, particularly since the district is in the midst of its budget process at the present time. So that's another topic, both of which the AASB participation and health insurance that will be ongoing at the school district level.
Yep. Well, how many districts does the NEA Trust represent?
It represents, I cannot tell you specifically the number of districts, but I can tell you that well over half of the teachers in the state are involved in that trust.
Well, I would think that would be have a large impact on if the district went with
a smaller target group
entity. It would be
well. We'll see how that plays out, because right now it's still a hot topic of discussion.
Oh, I'm sure.
And of course, over at the Borough Assembly, which did not have a meeting this week, we'll have one next week. There have been some executive sessions that have been focused on an interest in having a reconsideration of a pipeline that would take a look at a location here in the district at our port rather than at other locations such as Valdez. And that the detail there is scarce, it seems, Oz. Have you heard anything else about that?
Well, yeah, FERC has ordered the entity to go back and look at Port McKenzie and Valdez.
Right.
That they didn't do due diligence on that process, which was the subject of a kind of a crowing press release from the Matt Subaru, but certainly it's not a done deal.
Uh-huh. I think you've summed that up pretty well, but it could have major implications for the kinds of economic development that has been long sought, particularly in the Point McKenzie area.
Right. Yeah, it's certainly not a sign that the pipeline is going there. It's just a order or that a requirement that both of those locations get a closer look because of complaints from both areas that they didn't get a fair shake. There was a lot of grumbling throughout the process that there are, you know, forces at play that don't want either one of those ports to get this project. So I'll leave it at that.
Very good.
Okay. So we'll see how that evolves. One of the things that we have been looking at is whether there has been, and David and I, full disclosure, Zaz, prior to the beginning of this session, have wondered, we've mused about the situation in general that has been encouraging people to look in more specific information about alleged wrongdoing. We've seen that happen. In fact, it precipitated in a couple of cases a replacement in the legislative level. And it does seem, and we've touched upon this before, it does seem that it's harder to hide things that are happening in the present time. And there seems to be a willingness to go back in time and find information that might be detrimental to a person's career. And I'm wondering whether, from your perspective as a reporter, you have noticed over the years now a change where it is more difficult to hide an indiscretion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I started as a reporter, we didn't really use the internet. I mean, I started full-time in 1994, and absolutely the internet was available, but not to the, I mean, I did not get on Google and look up a name of someone charged in a crime, and then go to Facebook and see how many kids they have. And there is so much information, not just improprieties, but just, you know, what previously was fairly private information. This is sort of an aside, but as a reporter, you know, I'm very careful about what information I put out there, because, you know, I don't want to be exposed in terms of my private life, because I know how much other people's private lives are exposed. But certainly, the level of transparency on your past mistakes, you know, it used to be that if you were charged with a crime, that was easy enough to find. But if you were involved in something and maybe investigated and not charged, we wouldn't see that unless we dug a little bit. And now that information can come out more easily if other people are making accusations against you, which makes it that much more striking that some of these improprieties don't come out in the initial vetting process.
Right.
It's not that hard anymore to find out this information about people.
Well, I'm wondering whether the people involved in vetting who might not be professional vetters, and I'm thinking about organizations, this is bringing a sort of full circle back to the earlier discussion, where we're choosing someone and we don't avail ourselves of someone with the skills to go out and do a very thorough background check. I mean, this locally, we've talked about vetting someone who's going to be proposed as a member of the Alaska Senate, but also we have at the higher levels at the White House questions about vetting, background checks, processes that are going on for a long, long, long time where someone has a temporary security clearance, for example, and one would think that in a year, because of the availability of professional vetters, one would be able to have that information and make decisions. But I'm wondering if, in part, what has happened is that there's been a denigration of the professional vetting person saying, yes, I know you've told me this, but we want this person anyway, or we take that information in, but we're really not going to act upon it, whereas I guess that's what I'm wondering about. David, any comment?
Well, yeah, and part of it is that there's a cultural shift going on, and it might be that some of the, you know, one of the potential candidates had made some Facebook comment comparing women to dogs, and there might be a group of people who didn't see a problem with that in an informal setting, and they just ran into this sudden change in the culture where our values have changed, and we have decided that that is not a quality that we want in our leadership. So it's the quality of, you know, the ability to professionally vet and look at these situations and to imagine what that looks like to the public at large and at this particular moment in time.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's a really good point. Because I think that, you know, he didn't say, like, women are like dogs. He put up a list of 10 reasons why your dog is, what, better to have around than your wife or something like that. And so, you know, it's like there are certain people who think that's funny. And, you know, it wasn't in all seriousness type, you know, I think women are dogs. There wasn't any cursing in it, you know. But it, you know, seen through a certain filter is okay for some people, seen through certainly different generations, as David is saying, should have been a red flag.
Okay. Well, I'd like to finish up with a little bit of discussion about reactions here in Alaska to events that occurred in Florida at the horrific event at Parkland High School where 17 people were killed. I noted that there was a report that for 17 minutes, students at Service High School walked out, essentially, to demonstrate their attention to that event. And the principal was quoted there saying he just wanted to make sure it was a safe thing, but he didn't stand in the way of that happening. Zaz, were you aware of any other demonstrations of any sort here in Alaska?
You know, I didn't track that personally. I know that there were more than one school in Anchorage, certainly. I don't know of schools in Matsu. Did either of you hear about walkouts at schools up here?
Not to our knowledge. We didn't see that.
I mean, you know, my kids are at, well, one of them anyway, is in a higher level school here, and I didn't hear anything about it there.
Okay. So what we do know is that nationwide, apparently, the students have found a voice, and obviously to the point of being invited to the White House for a listening session, to be in Florida at a number of venues where they have had a chance to talk with. We're not talking only about students, but there were parents and others that have continued the discussion. And most recently, the governor, Rick Scott, of the state of Florida, has proposed a series of steps that were surprising to some because they seem to go well beyond what both the NRA and the president have suggested. So there, of course, coming back to Alaska remains the question whether we are different. We have had only one, to my knowledge, school shooting, and that was 20 years ago. And there was recently a very, I thought, well-done article that looked at the young man who was 16 at the time. 20 years later, he's 36, he's still in jail, and will likely to remain there for the rest of his life. And we have not had school shootings of the same sort that have occurred in other places, even though we have a very high level in the state of gun violence, domestic violence. Perhaps the culture in Alaska is different. David, any comment?
Well, the population is different. It's a smaller population. You know, I do not think that all the 50 states are represented in the mass shootings. So I don't even know if we can call these, you know, the kind of shooting that happened in Florida, if we can call that an epidemic yet. But it does seem to be increasing. And so statistically, the probability, however slight, increases a bit as long as conditions, whatever the conditions are, stay the same. But we do have other kinds of gun violence with different kinds of weapons that, as you mentioned, and there we have a gun culture in our state that respects those weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Zaz, any last comments before we finish up here? I know you have some stories you've been following.
Yeah, there's also more snow expected. So finish up clearing what you got. We got, I don't know, 7-8 inches here near Hatcher Pass.
Ah, right, right. And more coming. It seems to be every other day, a day of sun, a day of snow, and so on into the near future. Well, I want to thank David Cheesham for coming in today and sharing. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking the time to call in today. Have a good weekend and enjoy the snow and enjoy the sun.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.